This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. State election officials couldn't agree what to tell clerks about how to handle poll watchers, what this means for Election Day. Plus, Senator Ron Johnson surges with a 6-point lead over his Democratic opponent. We have those results and more from the latest Marquette University Law School poll and the highlights from two U.S. Senate debates. Also, what you can expect from Tony Evers and Tim Michaels' first and only debate. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for October 14th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we're going to start this week as the Wisconsin Elections Commission basically couldn't really issue any guidance over when it comes to poll observers. Now, poll observers kind of got heightened scrutiny after the 2020 election, with a lot of people wanting to get more involved from the Republican side of the party to watch what goes on basically at a polling place. So they weren't able to agree on what to tell local officials when it comes to how far someone can stand. Of course, there's already rules in place right now for poll observers, but there was a proposal by the Republican chair, Don Millis, after he said he heard concerns from the public about what's allowed at polling sites, and he wanted to clarify the law. But of course, Democrats argue this is too close to an election to change the rules. We're under 3 weeks until Election Day. WEC had this meeting. Let's kind of just first hear from both sides on this issue.
I think it's fine to have something in writing so that everybody who walks in the building understands what statute says and that the clerks are complying with the statute. 3 to 8 feet from the tables as Commissioner Jacobs stated. All you're doing is you're making sure that observers who walk into that building understand what the statute says and that the clerk is complying with them. And I don't think that's springing something new on somebody for the first time.
If we're just adding the statute, the previous information worked fine. And I remain concerned about this whole number of observers thing, because what it does is penalizes any observer who's honest and rewards those who are dishonest. We're 30 days out. We need to keep our hands off the process absent something really urgent. You know, COVID, yes, we had to really act in urgent ways. This isn't urgent. This isn't new. It's worked before. I don't think we mess with it at this point and start modifying it in any way.
So this really doesn't give clerks any guidance for election observers heading into Election Day. And also we've seen that there has been some intimidation at polls, and some poll workers are concerned without, you know, additional guidance that more intimidation could happen. We don't know if it happened here in Wisconsin, but it's happened in other states. So this is kind of just an issue that's been an issue since 2020 election.
Yeah, remember, there's law, there's agency rule, and there's guidance. The law on observers is kind of sparse. It says it must be between no closer than 3 feet, no more than 8, from the table where you check in and announce who you are and everything, the table register to vote. Beyond that, it gives the Elections Commission the power to regulate or to put rules in place about observers. And a couple of things, like, for example, the chief official at a polling place can kick somebody out for being obnoxious, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rules process, the old Government Accountability Board, had rules in place that have expired, all right? There's no rule. The commission is writing a new rule. That's going to take a year or two. There's nothing in place for clerks right now to use beyond this sparse state law. The commission in March sent a memo to clerks based off that old GAB rule of, like, what they could do, like no recording equipment in a polling place, those kinds of things. Then there's guidance. This was going to be some new guidance for the clerks about what they should be doing, right? The challenge is Don Millis, in writing his proposed guidance, according to Democrats, went beyond state law. For example, I mentioned that you got to be between 3 and 8 feet of a table. Don's first proposal said no more than 3 feet. And he said, okay, wait, I made a mistake. That's my bad. We'll fix that. He also had proposed, for example, being within 3 to 8 feet of any table, like where you're counting absentee ballots. Dem's like, whoa, 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 we're going to cause problems here by doing this. And there are other things in his proposal that they felt like exceeded state law, that we can't do this because the Supreme Court, go back to past rulings, has said agencies, you can only do what's in the state law, you can't go beyond state law. It's that gray area of guidance and rules. So where are we at? Well, it could be.
It could be an interesting day.
It could be an interesting day. I will bet you there'll be a lot of attention on Milwaukee and what's going on there. That's the place where Republicans are kind of like on heightened alert about what's been going on. They think there's, you know, I've heard shenanigans, allegations for years about Milwaukee, whether it's justified or not. That's where I think you're going to see the most issues with people at polls trying to observe, because this all stems from 2020, where people complained about what they thought should be allowed versus what's actually in the law. The complaint was, well, I can't hear, I can't see, I can't check this person's ID to see if that's actually that person. That's not in the law. But people, because they feel like my perception is something funny is going on, this should be changed, this is what's driving this Republican discussion about, well, maybe we should alter the rules or the law about observers.
Because, right, there's a difference between a poll worker and a poll observer. You kind of just stand around and watch, but you're not checking people in. You're not checking people to sign the poll book at all. And there's just been so much more recruitment efforts, like you said, especially on the Republican side since the 2020 election. Speaking, keeping up with the theme on elections, we have an update on the ballot spoiling lawsuit that we recapped last week. A Wisconsin appeals court on Monday put a hold on the court ruling for now. But this is already happening, JR, right now, when absentee ballots are already sent out. Mm-hmm. People are already returning their absentee ballots. So what type of impact will it have, and when will the courts actually make a decision on this? Like we said, we are just, you know, weeks away from the election. So will there be a decision before that? We just have to see.
To complicate this issue even more, thanks to the courts, so this was filed in Waukesha County Court. The appeal was filed, and the Democrats appealing the decision want it moved to the 4th District Court of Appeals based in Madison. The Republicans who filed the lawsuit want it back in the 2nd District Court of Appeals based in Waukesha. Why is that? Madison-based 4th District is more liberal than the Waukesha-based 2nd District. The state Supreme, so now we had argument, a deadline of Wednesday, for the parties to kind of weigh in about this appeal. The state Supreme Court stepped in and said, okay, wait a second, now we've got a request from the Republicans to move this case back to the 2nd District. We have our own deadline of noon on Thursday for you to tell us whether we should step in and say the appeals court was wrong to move this case and go back to the 2nd District. In the meantime, Brad Schimmel, the Waukesha County judge, former Republican Attorney General, his decision banning the spoiling process is on hold. So what have we got to watch for? Number one, what state Supreme Court say? Where is it going to be heard? Number two, the appeals court say we will hear it. And number three, will Schimmel's decision go back in effect between now and, oh, 3.5 weeks from now?
Right. And we've talked about this before. How many people are still voting absentee? Mm-hmm. We know how many have gone out. But who does this really impacting, you know, right? And we don't want to have any candidates dropping out of the race, right? Was what happened in the primary election when a slew of candidates from U.S. Senate and a gubernatorial candidate on the Republican side, Kevin Nicholson, also dropped out. So people wanted to vote for someone else. But how many people actually want to spoil their ballot remains to be seen.
The bigger issue to me is still the issue about what's a complete address for witnesses.
Right.
A week ago after we finished taping, Dane County judge said, hey, the Elections Commission previously had guidance in place saying an address was street number, street name, municipality. If you got that, you're good. I'm not going to issue an injunction saying you must accept incomplete addresses. You don't have a zip code on there, according to this guidance, but I'm not going to say you can leave off your municipality, for example. We have another Dane County judge hearing a similar lawsuit asking a similar thing, declare partial addresses okay. That's going on as we speak. So that's something to watch as well. So yeah, it never ends.
And these lawsuits never do in Wisconsin, especially when it comes to elections. All right, and another update from another story that we covered last week on the show about the Milwaukee Get Out the Vote effort. So that lawsuit, one portion of it, basically the request by the Republican Party, wanted to seek records about the Milwaukee Get Out the Vote effort. That open records lawsuit was dismissed because they said they already got mm-hmm. what they wanted. But this issue is still at stake because Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson has long argued that the Milwaukee Votes is privately funded, it's nonpartisan, it's just strictly designed to encourage voting and for people to register. But GOP is still fighting currently right now to eliminate it because they believe it's very similar to how Zuckerbucks were funding elections in 2020. They believe it gives Democrats an edge. It's specifically designed to help Democrats get out the vote.
And there was a hearing on the merits of that lawsuit on Wednesday. The city ahead of that hearing said, look, the Republicans are citing these various laws, and there's a conflict here that there's something inappropriate. One thing they're citing doesn't apply to elected officials in Milwaukee. Another thing they're citing says that there's a conflict if you have an interest in a group. Neither the mayor nor his family have a stake in these groups involved in this. They're saying that doesn't apply to us. So the judge was peppering the Republican attorneys like, okay, where is your proof? Where is your proof that the city is funding this, aiding, you know, doing something inappropriate, aiding this? Where is your proof where the money is going through some kind of public process? And they had a hard time kind of answering that question. The judge said she would have it issue a decision likely next week. So we'll find out what's going on with that. But in the meantime, you know, the Republicans are asking for an order to shut down this effort. I still am kind of unsure how that would work when you have privately funded groups doing a private effort. Maybe you can get an order saying that the city can't help, or the city must stay within the law of what it can do. But I'm not sure if that's going to shut down that effort at this point.
And the clock is ticking, right?
Yes.
We had a new Marquette University Law School poll this week, and kind of the same headlines with the governor's race. We'll start with that, is that it's going to be tight, right? Mm-hmm. Not dramatic change here at all between the matchup between Tony Evers and Tim Michaels. Pretty, you know, it's split. It's within the margin of error. And, you know, Charles Franklin, poll director, has essentially said what many of us are saying, it's going to be a toss-up, so remains to be seen there. Do we see anything else interesting with these results, mm-hmm. specifically about the governor's race? We did see Michaels get a little bit of an upswing with independent voters. So other than that, was anything else that you found interesting from the governor's results?
The trend has been decent for Michaels with independents. It's been swinging toward him as well as Johnson in the Senate race. The issue is, in the governor's race, if you look at the TV spending, the period of this poll, from the day after it got out of the field to the day this one ended, the day the last one got the field, this one ended. Evers and company have outspent Michaels' company by a dramatic amount. So that may explain why you have a 6-point gap between what Michaels is doing and what Johnson is doing, because the reverse happened in the Senate race. Between the day after the last poll ended and this one that came out of the field, Johnson and company outspent Barnes and company by like $7 million on TV and paid media. That probably is helping fuel what's going on with the Senate race, right? The question that I have is, will we actually have a 6-point gap between the Senate race and the governor's race on Election Day? Looking at the governor's poll, Joan Benglinger, who is a nurse and healthcare administrator who dropped out of the race as an independent but is still on the ballot, she was at 4 points. I don't know if she's going to get 4 points on Election Day. That might be people who are like, I don't like these guys a whole lot right now, so I'm going to say this person. Also looking at the numbers more closely, Michaels is having a harder time consolidating the Republican base than Johnson is. There's about an 8-point gap in where Johnson was a self-identified Republican versus where Michaels was. Is that because of lingering feelings about the primary with Rebecca Clayfish? Is that because of abortion questions, right? These mm-hmm. doubts that Evers trying to plant for some Republican-leaning women about Michaels and his stance on abortion? I don't know. We don't have a focus group to tell us that. But that's what I'm kind of watching, is that trend. You know, numbers are always great, but what's the trend? And can Michaels consolidate the Republican base by the last poll in November? That makes you a better idea of where he's at with those folks come that way.
And you already kind of teased up with Ron Johnson, of course, was surging in this latest mm-hmm. poll, too. He went up by 7 points against Mandela Barnes, and he's slowly just been getting a lead over the past 3 polls. I mean, mm-hmm. it was, gosh, August, I want to say, that Mandela Barnes, right after the primary, was up by 6 points over Johnson, but that has slowly, essentially, I mean, evaporated. And my question is how does Barnes recover from this, and can he recover?
So that August poll was probably a sugar high for Barnes because it came right, I mean, mm-hmm. it went in the field the day after the primary, essentially. Barnes has $20 million he raised in the third quarter. That is a lot of money. He can put that on the air, and that can help him a great deal. Now, the question, though, is you look at the national map right now. We're still getting a lot of money spent in Wisconsin by Democratic groups. Will they carry out that commitment through Election Day if things don't turn around, right? That's always a worry. You see it every year. You see groups pull out or go into races at the last minute because they think it's not money well spent. Barnes needs to keep this race close to keep the money coming in, both for his campaign and for the outside group spending money on TV and other paid media. That's also key for Democrats in general. If the investments in that Senate race go away for some reason, that probably hurts the entire ticket,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to hope, if you're a Democrat, that barn. Obviously you want to win, but two, at least keeps it close enough to keep people investing. And look, the trajectory is not great for Barnes. There's a time to turn this around, possibly. But you have to have an effective counter to the crime message. People have argued to me for a while now that Barnes wasn't doing a good job of it. He's talking more personal terms about crime, like, I've been touched by gun crime. I hope you never have to feel what I've felt, because that's a more effective message we saw before. Is there time, though, in 3 weeks and change, to change that trajectory of that race?
And we're also hearing national reports from Politico yesterday saying that the Barnes campaign has kind of been reaching out for more reinforcements, possible former President Barack Obama, maybe bringing Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, I mean, big name, big top Democrats to help energize his base leading into the election. He kind of danced around that question yesterday on a call with reporters, but what remains to be seen if they actually bring those people. We know that Governor Evers has kind of done the Heisman to a Joe Biden visit, even though he eventually did take the photographs when Biden was visiting him in Milwaukee on Labor Day weekend. So that's also something we'll have to wait and see.
And you see the Marquette poll, why? The people who are absolutely certain to vote are the numbers you saw with a six-point gap in the Senate race, and basically even the Gov's race, the 1 point. The people who are registered voters but not likely to turn out, they favor Barnes and Evers by big margins. Now, they're not a huge part of the poll, huge margin of error for that question, but that's a challenge for Democrats. I've learned about turn operations over the years that you can't force somebody to go out and vote if they don't want to, but you can capture the enthusiasm, right? Mm-hmm. The challenge for these Democratic operations is Republicans seem to have the environment in their favor. Can they get that casual voter who's going, I'm not happy about Biden, I'm not happy about inflation, am I maybe going to sit this one out? They can get them to go turn out. Because looking at the enthusiasm, it's pretty even for self-identified Republicans and self-identified Democrats. It's that casual voter, again, who's open at Barnes or Evers, who's not really motivated to vote right now. Can you get them to turn out election day?
And we got kind of a block of recapping some debates and one that is going to be happening later today. Let's first start with the U.S. Senate debate. It was last Friday that the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association hosted theirs. And then just last night, TMJ, a station in Milwaukee, hosted theirs. Now, the real main difference, I will say, is that from last Friday, it was not really, there wasn't much debate. There were certain issues. They had very strict time limits, and they weren't really able to rebuttal from each other. Last night, they were able to respond to those attacks from one another. We're going to listen first from the TMJ debate last night. Barnes was asked a question about how they've been portrayed in this race, and he went on to attack Ron Johnson for being basically married into his business, a business that he was with his brother-in-law. And then Johnson also kind of criticized Mandela Barnes for not ever creating a job. So let's take a listen to that, and then we'll kind of dive into a lot of the messaging and themes that we heard.
There's no commercials talking about Senator Johnson's record because he has nothing to run on. He hasn't done a single thing for us. He's had 12 years to show up for work in Wisconsinites. He has refused to every single day. And look, the biggest achievement in business was Ron Johnson saying, "I do." He married into his business. If you have had humble beginnings and you've made it in life, for you to turn your back on everybody else, that's what people are frustrated with. That's what I'm frustrated with. We need people who are going to go to the mat to fight for working people to improve quality of life. When we had a chance at 1,000 good-paying union jobs with Oshkosh Defense, and they decided they wanted to move the jobs to South Carolina, Senator Johnson's response was, "We have enough jobs."
Has the lieutenant governor ever created a job? I've created hundreds of jobs. Through my JOSER project, we have transformed the lives of hundreds of people and positively impacted the lives of thousands of people. Again, these are people in the inner city, formerly incarcerated people, drug and alcohol abuse. I've been doing this for 7 or 8 years. It's the most heartwarming thing I've done. How can you say I've turned my back on people? I haven't turned my back at all. And I don't know whether he's just delivering lines somebody wrote for him or whether he's making this stuff up on his own. But falsehoods just seem to roll off his tongue. So I suggest anybody watching this debate or the campaign, take anything Mr. Barnes says with a huge grain of salt.
Between both debates, a lot of the issues were the same: abortion, immigration, economy, inflation. But with TMJ's debate, there was a lot more jabs at each other. One thing that I did find interesting is that the moderators at TMJ kind of pressed Johnson specifically about the abortion issue because he has supported federal legislation and now is for, essentially near total abortion ban. Now he's been kind of saying that he's open to exceptions, but his messaging now is that, well, let's put it before the voters. Let's put it through a ballot referendum. But you can't do that unless you get the approval from lawmakers. You have to change the laws in order to do that. And then Johnson's answer was basically saying, well, I'll work. I'll make sure that the legislature listens to me and has my input to get that done. So I thought that was interesting. Anything else, some of the main takeaways, Jarrah, that you found kind of newsworthy?
It was personal. I mean, these attacks weren't just about positions. They were about personalities and who they are as people. I mean, one that stood out last night was they were asked, say something nice about each other.
Oh, yeah.
And Mandela Barnes said, I respect that Ron Johnson is a family man. Ron Johnson said, hey, I respect the upbringing of Mandela Barnes. His mom was a teacher, dad worked third shift, which makes you wonder why he turned his back on America. And that drew boos, I'm guessing, mostly from Barnes people. But it was kind of like a you can't even say anything nice even in that moment about your opponent kind of moment. But there are lots of them. You know, Barnes saying this guy is only out for himself. Johnson, this guy has got no record to run on. It was more personal than last week, and that was maybe because they were allowed to engage each other more.
That's
often.
That's what I thought, yeah.
But definitely more personal than the week before.
All right, and let's kind of preview tonight's debate between Evers and Michaels. It will be their first and only time they will share a debate stage, mm-hmm. So probably a lot more interest in watching this, but it is going to be a similar format to the U.S. Senate debate that we saw last Friday hosted by WBA. I think we can expect the very same issues, economy, inflation, abortion, and you know what you want, maybe top priorities since you're in office. I think there's a lot of lingering questions that a lot of people don't know about Tim Michaels. Mm-hmm. Will he divest himself from his multi-million dollar company that he co-owns with his brother? So it remains to be seen. I mean, the moderator last week held the candidate saying, you did not answer the question, answer that. I know a lot of times that I've been out there on the campaign trail when Michaels has an event, he doesn't really give a clear answer, but says he's willing to work with mm-hmm. people. So we'll see. That's something I'll be watching for.
Look, what I'm watching for is there a major gaffe that becomes a viral moment or a campaign ad? These things are not, races aren't won by debates anymore, but they can be lost by them. Looking back at the Senate debate again, I mean, the whole perception was that Mandela Barnes didn't want to debate Ron Johnson more than once. Remember, at first he was only going to do one. Then he did a second one that Johnson wanted to do. Barnes did pretty well. I mean, maybe he lowered our expectations significantly by the way they mm-hmm. approached it, but the feedback I got from Democrats and Republicans was Barnes did well. Mm-hmm. Actually, probably should have gotten another debate in with Ron Johnson. With this one, Tim Michaels had to clean up after both of his two debates in the primary. Will he have to do clean up after this one? For the Michaels folks, getting through this debate without a gaffe or a cleanup moment would be a success. They're looking at Tony Evers. I mean, they've been telling me this week, well, Evers did pretty well against Walker 4 years ago. He's been through this much more than Tim has. His backers are like, hey, just make it through, we're fine. For Evers, you kind of wonder why he doesn't want more debates to give more chances for Michaels to have a mistake. But look at the spending on TV. And you know why? Because he's getting his message out through TV, and he avoids a chance for himself to slip up.
Right.
So does either candidate slip up tonight? That's the big question for me.
And I do expect a lot on crime as well. Mm-hmm. Tim Michaels and a lot of Republicans have been really hammering Evers and his parole commission. Now, while Evers doesn't have control over the parole commission, there's been a lot of negative headlines of his parole commission releasing violent criminals, and that has been, I think, really driving a lot of energy in this race for Michaels. But we'll see what's talked about on that tonight. Let's get to stock picks this week. Rising the state budget.
So it just came out today, the final accounting of fiscal year 21-22. Revenues were up $975 million compared to the year before, while expenses were down $376 million compared to what was budgeted for the year. That equates to a $4.3 billion budget surplus at the end of the last fiscal year, June 30th. Now, looking ahead, the Fiscal Bureau, the nonpartisan budget arm of the legislature, has projected that in this current fiscal year, revenues will outpace expenses by about $1 billion and change. So do some basic math. You're talking a budget surplus north of $5.3 billion if the second year projections hold. The challenge, of course, is rising interest rates, right. Questions about a recession. Those second year projections could go down. Other thing is the rainy day fund is $1.7 billion. That is much like the surplus for the first of the biennium. That is a record. What I'm watching with that money, and I've got a few years left, Emily. I know I've been here for a while, but I got a few left. If you'll ever see Republicans tap that money, like how bad would it have to be? Because my conversations with Republicans have been they'd rather cut than grab that money. They don't want to spend that. That's not really something they want to touch. So I'm kind of watching if we see another recession like what I saw impact the budget in 2001, 08, 09, that if we see something bad enough, they dip into it, or if they cut first.
All right. And mixed this week, Attorney General, Republican candidate Eric Toney, doesn't have much money in the bank right now and can't really get up on TV.
So Josh Call, the Democratic incumbent, is on TV for the first time. He's gone up on the air. The Republican Attorneys General Association is spending about $2 million between end of September and the election. Call, plus the Democratic Attorneys General Association, have about $3 million laid down. In gross ratings points, how often you see those ads, the disparity is 4-1 in Call's favor. Toney has about $7,000 laid down as of right now. This is according to Ad Impact. It tracks TV buys. You subscribe to it. There's time to add in more. We've seen no evidence of Eric Toney being able to raise enough money to get up on the air in a meaningful way. Why he's mixed is because it may not matter.
Yeah, right.
Looking at the Marquette poll and the trends in Johnson's favor, where the governor's race is, the question is, can either Eric Toney or Josh Call break through the clutter? Because there are millions and millions and millions up on TV in those two races. Call, in his ad, says, "I am Josh Call." He's still introducing himself to people after being in office for nearly 4 years.
Yeah.
It's not great. There's an old joke in politics that AG stands for aspiring governor. And, yeah. You know, Call, if he were to win re-election, no matter what happens with Evers in November, we don't expect him to run again in 2026, right? So Call would be a top contender for it, but has he used the office as a good platform to build a statewide brand? Not really. His backers say it's because he's too much of a Boy Scout to use the office politically. He's, you know, more focused on the job.
Yeah.
That said, what I'm getting at is this could be a generic ballot race. What's happening at the top of the ticket? If Ron Johnson's up by 6 points, he could pull Tim Michaels across the finish line against Evers and Eric Toney and go down the ballot. The one exception might be the Secretary of State's race, where Doug LaFollette has his name ID that's unique to a lower tier statewide candidate. Toney, his campaign's kind of a mystery. He's been going around the state, all kinds of news conferences, talking about stuff, but people don't see that. They see ads, and he's not up. If you ask the average voter what Eric Toney's top three issues are, they'd have a hard time identifying Toney and what those issues are, but they also have a hard time seeing who Josh Call is. They don't really know him very well. So it's just it's one of the weirdest statewide races I think I've ever covered or talked to people about in Wisconsin.
And we could maybe see mixed ballot outcomes as well, which has not happened for a very long time. Falling this week is Brad Paff, who is running for former Congressman Ron Kind's seat.
So a couple of things. One, Axios reported the weekend that the House Majority PAC is thinking about pulling out of the race. That would be very bad for Brad Paff, because looking at the spending between Derek Van Orden and his allies and Brad Paff and his, that PAC is the majority of the money being spent on his behalf. Crystal Ball, it's a thing at the University of Virginia that Larry Sabato does. They move this race from lean Republican to likely Republican.
Yep.
It underscores a challenge for Democrats, Wisconsin Democrats, of getting people to care nationally about this race. They are frustrated that they're not seeing investment in Western Wisconsin to try and prevent a person who was at the Capitol grounds at the protest ahead of January 6, 2021. Van Orden says he left before things turned violent. There's a picture of him on the wall of the restricted area of the Capitol. You know, all kinds of like debate about that stuff. Wisconsin Democrats don't like the fact there's not an investment here. But if you're a national Democrat, you're thinking, we have a difficult environment possibly. Number one, shore up incumbents. Number two, where are districts that we could possibly win? This West Wisconsin district has been trending Republican for a while.
Yes.
You don't have Ron Kind in there. Now, Ron Kind's not leaving his former aide all by himself. Ron Kind filed an FEC report yesterday that I went through. He gave $250,000 from his campaign account to this group running an ad against Van Orden, knocking him about January 6th. Kind had another $700,000 in the bank. He could help out some more. But that's not enough compared to like what Van Orden and his allies are doing, because candidates get better rates. Van Orden's been a good fundraiser. He has a huge gross rating points advantage over Paff on TV spending in that race right now.
And Paff has also tried to get a debate with Van Orden, and he is not about it. There's not going to be one. Van Orden rarely even is questioned about the January 6th, but dodges questions about that. And there's just not a lot of media in the La Crosse market. I mean, you got a TV station and one paper, I believe, off the top of my head. So it's just not a race that is getting as much news coverage if you were here in, you know, Milwaukee, Madison, and the outlying suburbs of Milwaukee as well. All right. That will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.